Welcome to the Change Hub podcast, where empowering midlife conversations happen with Tina and Shana. Together, we promise to dive deep and explore everything from emotional well-being, physical health, personal growth, and the dynamic changes in our relationships. We believe midlife isn't a crisis, it's an opportunity to turn difficult conversations into the best is yet to come mindset. Hello, and in this episode, we delve into the complex issue of unresolved trauma and its subtle yet profound effects on our present and future lives. So, hello, Tina. How are you doing today?
I am great. This is such a great topic, and I'm so excited to start off. Really, this is our first topic for this podcast.
Yeah.
And it's really the thing that really kind of changed my life as far as creating those aha moments to, oh my gosh, this is the patterns and the behaviors that I've been doing all my life, really. And there's actually solutions that we can do that will be able to do those pattern interrupts and change the outcomes, the results that we're after.
Yeah, that's right. And we're going to get into that today, aren't we, Tina? We just had a little pre-chat and we were getting very deep. And I just said, let's just go for it, press record and continue this conversation.
Exactly, exactly. And the thing is, it's not really necessarily those big traumas, although those big traumas are very impactful in our life. You know, if you've had physical, emotional abuse, maybe a tragic car accident or something like that, those ones can really change the trajectory of your life in a very empowering way. But there's also this other type of trauma that we don't really consider trauma. And, you know, there's something called CEN, childhood emotional neglect, that actually Dr. Jonas Webb, who wrote Running on Empty, talks about in very detail. And these are very subtle emotional neglects that we had as childhood. We're very impressionable between 0 and 7 years of age.
Right. And I remember attending a live presentation you did in your Facebook group. Was it last week or the week before? I was captivated by what you were talking about and certainly had some aha moments with, and never heard this before. So talk to us about that a little bit.
Yeah. So what she talks about is those things that it's what you didn't get, not necessarily what happened to you, but what didn't happen to you.
Right.
And so, you know, maybe your two parents were working, you know, long hours, trying to put food on your table, clothe you, give you a nice shelter, thinking that they're doing all the right things by being financially stable, but yet they weren't necessarily emotionally available for you. You know, when you were excited running home from school to show them a mark you got on a test and nobody's there to show it to, or it's just the babysitter, kind of loses that connection that we thrive as children.
Mm-hmm. And it's so often actually when I have clients who, you know, in that first session and they come to me because, you know, they have anxiety or they have this thing that they can't identify what is wrong, but they need help to recover from it. And I ask them about their childhood and they'd say to me, oh, no, I had a fabulous childhood. You know, both my parents were, you know, very supportive, that nothing traumatic happened. And I think that's what you're discussing here, isn't it? It's
exactly
about having, you know, I guess, you know, nobody has the ideal childhood, but having a childhood where both parents are present, nothing happened that was particularly traumatic, yet they haven't identified that this has happened. And it really can affect us in our life. We have no idea.
Yeah, like even that scenario that I just gave, possibly they may have thought, well, I'm not important enough, or, you know, I'm not valued. Some of those thoughts might have been developed, rightly or wrongly, but it's the child's interpretation at that time, at that point in their life. Mm-hmm. And if these run continuously, you know, if you have more and more evidence that, you know, you don't have value, you're not important enough, then it's going to carry forward in your behaviors and your patterns moving forward
Right.
in adulthood.
Right. And we don't necessarily realize that these limiting beliefs, we call them limiting beliefs, right? In the work that we do, these limiting beliefs are locked away and need help to uncover and then to work on and to turn them around to empowering beliefs. And so these limiting beliefs get neutralized. And so those patterns of behavior and those feelings never resurface again because they've been healed.
Exactly. So that kind of moves into how do we even know that we have limiting beliefs?
Ah, how do we know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's all about self-awareness, isn't it, really?
Yeah. And it's looking to what our outcomes are. If you don't get the outcome that you desire, then there's sure to be limiting beliefs that are sabotaging you from getting that result that you're really thriving for
That's
or
right.
striving for, I mean.
Right. And there are certain patterns of behavior that happen when we are trying subconsciously to distract ourselves away from the things that are hurting us deep down. I call these too much behaviors, where somebody's doing something they feel and not realizing, but they think is self-soothing that emotional hurt, but it's not really. So it's those bad habits that we form to distract ourselves away from the hurt that we're feeling inside because we don't recognize it at the time. So these too much behaviors, the obvious ones are drinking too much, smoking too much, eating too much, and many other of these habitual behaviors that we do. And really, when I get a client who has a habit that they want to lose, and they tell me I have an addictive personality, I don't mean to be cruel, but I don't accept that because I believe that everybody can overcome anything that they want to. And I've seen it over and over again. And what to me, what they're addicted to is not the thing, but it's more the distraction. It's more they're addicted to distracting themselves from the hurt. And once they have that aha moment, then they understand that they have the power to release the behavior and really do whatever they want to do. I think the kind of second phase of that is teaching them some things that they can do that really will help them to live a life of limitless possibilities, creating patterns of behavior that do self-soothe, not self-harm.
Right. And I often hear too, I don't have willpower for that, or
Yeah.
and these are language patterns that identify that there's limiting beliefs lurking in the background, because it's not that we don't have willpower, it's just that we haven't made it important enough for us to want to change it, or we just don't know that that's running in our neurology in the background. And I went to a seminar once with Jack Canfield. And if you don't know who Jack Canfield is, he's a very inspirational speaker. He wrote the Chicken Soup for the Soul series. And one big takeaway from that conference was that he had this equation. If you have an event, you have a response to that event, you get an outcome. So E plus R equals O. If you don't like your outcome, you can change the response to it. You can't change the event because the event is the event. It's factual. It's what happened. But how we respond to it can have a dramatic difference to the outcome that we get.
Absolutely.
So empowering for me to realize it's like, oh my gosh, it's that simple. I can just change that response, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. And we utilize that in our sessions, don't we, with what we call pattern interrupts.
Yes, exactly. If you don't like what you're getting, then how can you get a different result, right? And that's going to be more empowering for you. And then you can say, okay, what kind of response will give me that empowering outcome that I'm striving for?
Yeah. So in your sessions, how do you advise your clients, or How do you redirect your clients to help them to achieve that result?
I use something what I call the reframing technique. Basically, well, it's really a self-awareness practice that, if we can get in the habit of doing, it can be so empowering for us. And so, because it's all about awareness, right? It's all about awareness. And so the first thing is acknowledging that there is some sort of pattern or behavior that you're doing that you don't like. It's not giving you the outcome that you want. And look for those limiting beliefs. The second part is to falsify those limiting beliefs. Find evidence in your life where you've shown that you've been able to do that very thing that you think that you can't do.
Yeah.
And then you change it because now you have proof, right? So because we have to believe what we want, that we can get what we want. And if we don't believe it, then we're never going to get there. By finding that evidence, it can give you that belief system. Oh my gosh, that's totally false. So now I can change it into an empowering belief. And then that will give me a different outcome. I can start to take actions towards where I want to go.
I can see how that can be very effective. And
Yeah.
can this happen in one session, or is it a number of sessions that typically it works for?
Well, I mean, the strategy, we talk about it usually in one session, but it just means repetition, right? It's doing that self-awareness practice each and every day so that you can catch yourself when you go back into the patterns, right? Because it's not like we can do it once and then, oh, we're perfect. It has to be done several times. They say it takes 21 to 30 days to create a new habit, right? So the repetitiveness is what's going to create the change.
Right. And I totally agree with you with that, because when we're talking about interrupting these patterns, it starts off, from my perspective, it starts off with that original thought. They're having that thought. Okay. So typically, with a pattern of behavior, there's a number of things that happen following a thought. And the negative habit that they want to get rid of because they're self-soothing from that trauma is a well-ingrained neural pathway in the brain. Starts off with a thought and then it trickles down. Okay, when I have this thought, this is the behavior that I always do to help me to feel better, whether it's pouring a glass of wine or having a cigarette or whatever it is. And they get that dopamine rush and it feels good. And so that road has been traveled many, many times. So for me, it's about helping my clients to create a number of different reroutes. So that, they have a thought and instantly recognizing that they have a thought, that's where the self-awareness comes in, and creating a number of different options for them that they can do instead that will create a dopamine rush for them so that they feel good doing it that way. And because we know that the brain loves to conserve energy, which is how habits are formed, very soon by repeating those behaviors over a very short period of time, really, that new habit is then formed and the old habit kind of disappears as if by magic.
It is magic. It is magic. And we were talking earlier before we came on today about a technique that you use that's very effective. I wondered if you could talk about that.
Right. So the technique that I was referring to is called an emotional detox. And I was just going through with Tina where it came from. And I have to reference Carl Smith with this. He was the founder of this technique. And his story, so he's a leader in our hypnosis world. He created this particular technique based on his own experiences of a lot of trauma. He was a soldier. He's an English guy, and he was a soldier, and he was sent off to war, I think once or even twice, and had some horrific SD from that. And then he also had a horrific event when he came home, a very violent, horrific event. And he got hypnotherapy to help him to resolve his trauma. That then sparked his career, and he created Emotional Detox Technique, which is a series of different bilateral stimulation plus hypnosis plus some NLP techniques, which is neuro-linguistic programming, all in this one session, which is very powerful. And it basically, when you run a client through that, they can release their trauma without having to talk about it, which I think is phenomenal. If you don't have to re-traumatize somebody who's already got trauma to help them to release it, it's a win-win. And this can
Yeah.
actually be done in one session. So for
Wow.
me, I always like to run my clients through this technique in most often the first session, because you never know what they're carrying. So whether it's a big trauma that they're aware of, or where they don't even realize that they're carrying traumas, this technique works so effectively and clears the slate and is so transformational. And then from there, we can work on pattern interrupts like we've been talking about, and doing other really cool tools and techniques to help them to achieve whatever it is that they want to.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
So I thought we could talk about some things that we can do that don't require
Hypnosis.
or
Yeah.
EDT, I guess it's called. Some things that people can do on their own, right? That can start the journey. And, I talked about the reframing as one, but there's also other things like going for a walk. I don't know about you, Shauna, but when I go for a walk, it's like the floodgates of my mind just open up. And I get very creative and I figure things out and I realize things. I realize some patterns and behaviors that I'm doing that aren't working for me just by being connected with nature. There's some sort of synergistic relationship that we have with nature, with Mother Earth, right? And it just gives us that kind of that calmness where we can create. Because when our conscious mind is at a relaxed state, which is what it's like when we're in the forest alone, I go alone. And when you're in that relaxed state, then you're able to be open to new ideas,
Yeah, and I agree with you. I love walking. I love it. I don't get to go to a forest very often because where I live in Florida here, it's pretty open. But nature, and there's lots of trails, and nature is wonderful. It does upset me when I go walking and I see people walking, looking at their phones. So this is something that you need to pay attention to, because if that's you, see the difference when you put your phone away. And to help you to, I can add on to this a little bit. Sometimes going for a walk, thoughts might start racing, especially if you have anxiety or you've had a particularly stressful time or day or whatever. And it can be difficult just to be on your own and know what to do to bring yourself back to balance. And cool little technique that I can kind of maybe offer to share that you can do to begin your walk to calm your thoughts is, I think it's called the 5-4-3-2-1 mindfulness technique. Do you know this one? Where you recognize or you start looking for five things that you can see and just name them in your mind. And then the next one is name four things that you can hear. And you just go through
Okay.
them one by one. And now let me remember, the third one would be smells. Maybe three things you can smell. And then two things that you can feel, one thing that you can taste. Now, you might not be tasting anything when you're walking the forest, but
You never know, there might
you
be
never
blueberry
know.
bush.
Exactly. And you can swap them around. I don't think that there is a hard and fast rule of which way around you do it. So if you're finding it difficult to hear four things, then move that down to two things. But if you allow yourself to get really absorbed in your senses, this is why it works so well. It's a mindfulness practice which can be very powerful to distract yourself away from the stress, to distract away yourself from the thoughts that might be going on in your mind. And at the end of just doing this little technique, you'll find that you're able to be way more present in the moment, which is really where the magic lies.
Yes, for sure. Getting into that calm state and being connected to self, very, very important.
And that's where the creativity comes in. And all the inspiration and all the good stuff start to flow. It'd be an interesting experiment that you can do with yourself maybe this week.
Yeah, I like that. And another couple of things that do come to mind are journaling. I find that journaling, just doing a brain dump, can kind of reveal a lot of things.
It can. And a lot of people say to me, well, I don't journal because I don't know what to put down, or I get stuck. And I just say, just start. You don't have to read it back. Just start writing and don't worry about punctuation. Don't worry about what you're talking about. It might make no sense whatsoever. But at some point, I think it's, and I'll have to check my facts, but I think it's after 10 minutes of writing, the subconscious takes over, and that's where really good stuff starts coming out. So if you can allow yourself to keep going for 10 minutes, you'll be surprised what happens after that few minutes of just starting.
And then there's always yoga, meditation, anything that brings you into a calm state, even an Epsom bath. Are all great ways that you can get into that state where things can become a little bit more obvious.
And some people might say, well, I don't have time for a bath, or I could be doing other things. But if you think of it just as another self-care routine, and 10, 15 minutes is all that it takes, and maybe dim the lights, put a candle on, some soft music, and just be with yourself for 10 minutes, you'd be amazed at the difference of how you feel at the end.
And the thing is, like we've given a lot of ideas here, but really it's picking the one that resonates with you, right? It's not like you have to do all of these things, but if you picked something that makes sense for you, that you can slide into your daily routine, that's effortless, because we don't want to create any tension trying to do a relaxation. So finding something that makes sense for you, it's going to be very empowering for you for sure.
Yes, it is.
Anything else we want to talk in this episode?
I don't think so. I think we've done a good job at the ins and outs and given some good tips. And of course, if there's anything else that you feel that we've missed, then we're open to hearing your thoughts. And of course, if you've taken our advice and done any of these things that we've talked about and you've had an experience you'd like to share, then getting in touch with us, and our links are in the description.
Bye, everyone.
Bye. Thank you for listening today, and remember to keep exploring, keep dreaming, and above all, keep believing in your power to change.